Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Are you ready? Let's get ready to ramp up your sails. And now the man you've been waiting for. He is the real thriller in Manila. The undisputed, undefeated, reigning, defending, pound for pound, heavyweight, John, the sales machine, Rankin!
Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest is world-renowned for his radical business makeovers. With over 30 years providing training, inspiration, and hope to brick-and-mortar businesses worldwide, he's best known as the Retail Doctor, advising retail businesses of all sizes, including Google, Lego, Hunter Douglas, Yamaha, IBM, American Express, and more. His work has been featured in Entrepreneur, PBS, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal. His online retail sales training program, SalesRx, is currently training thousands in over 20 countries around the world. A top voice on LinkedIn for retail and honored by the World Retail Forum with the Innovation Leadership Award, please welcome Bob Phibbs.
Wow, that's some introduction there. Thanks for joining. Thanks for having me, John.
Hey, it's a pleasure, and you've earned it. And, you know, I went through your experience, and, I mean, it is, like, extremely unique how you just stayed in one lane and then escalated it and took it to the next level, stuck to it, and started working with, you know, people like Google, Lego.
That wasn't all, those weren't all first. Those early years weren't exactly like that, my friend.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. That's why, you know, a lot of people throw in the towel, right? Especially when they first start out. And you can speak to that a lot more than I can, because you've worked with a lot of retail businesses. And for me, there's two types of businesses, and it's based on statistics and facts, and that's the quick and the dead. I'd like to hear your take on all of that, and how did you become the retail doctor?
When I was five, I wanted to grow up and become the retail. No, of course not. Although I will say, when I was in, grew up in Toledo, Ohio, so I would have been 9 or 10, I actually sold greeting cards door to door. We share that during the summer, which really sucked because you were going around in July trying to get imprinted Christmas cards to be delivered by November. I sold seeds. And I didn't have any fear. It was kind of like, some will, some won't. So what? Next. And honestly, any salesperson worth their salt should adopt that, because we all want that big sale. I do an awful lot of inbound marketing, but as much as I want to shake the tree, especially in 2024, people are going to buy you on their time. I have a guy who apologized, a major retailer, you probably wouldn't know, but several stores, and we started this dance January of 2023. And I've sent him all sorts of information, this, and met this guy and that guy, and they vetted everybody. And so he starts off the call. We were supposed to start February 1st. He starts off the call. He's like, you know, I don't think I'm, can't say it probably exactly the way he said it, but I'm not pulling your string. You know, we're still looking. We're just going to start on April 1st. We've got a new location. I go, dude, whenever you're ready to buy, I'm here to take your money. But I think sometimes we get so caught up, and I'm going to make them do it. It's like, maybe you are, but you're a person in their life. You're not the person in their life, right? And that's what I think is, as far as salespeople, we all realize, like, yeah, as long as I'm the best me and I understand where we are in the process, I can maybe get in my own way, but I can't make you do what I want you to do. And if you think you can do that, I think there's some great real estate and swamplands you can probably still sell to a few people. But most people these days, they can appreciate that. Don't you think, John?
I 100% agree, because we're a lot more informed. We have a lot more choices than when you and I grew up. I mean, with social media, with Amazon, eBay, you know, in Asia, it's Lazada, it's Shopee. We just have so many different choices. And Not only is the choices, it's the convenience. Like, we can get stuff delivered tomorrow. We don't even have to wait for it. Sometimes
in New York, I can get it in hours. So there you go. And yet, 80% of stores are still, 80% of merchandise is still sold in a store. And no matter what you're selling, it's still going to be done with, again, online, I certainly get that there's convenience in there. But if you're selling high ticket, luxury, things like that, it's still going to be some kind of a relationship. And that's what AI is trying to duplicate, right? With all the things that it can do behind the scenes.
Absolutely. It'll never replace a handshake, though.
I don't know. When Skynet comes, hopefully I'm gone and the machines are killing everyone. Hopefully I'm out of here by then. But, you know.
My actual take on the AI thing is it's a great co-pilot. You know, it's a resource that I can utilize as a co-pilot. And, I had Jeffrey Gitomer on the show, and, you know, he's the originator with the little red book of sales talking about know, like, and trust, right? I mean, it's been regurgitated a million times online, but Jeffrey's the guy who wrote that. And for me, that's where AI is not yet going to make the huge difference in the world, especially retail, right? People want that human connection. And you talked about that before we jumped on the show. And I'm in the skincare business, car care business, and now software business. And what I know from, going door to door and building direct sales teams for 30 years is people want to be heard and people want to know who you are, especially when they're buying high ticket. So why don't you talk about that and that experience and how that is really an edge over online?
Well, I think you just have to understand that there's all kinds of signals you get. I was just thinking back when I got the highest increase in sales, South Coast Plaza, number one mall in the world back in the 80s. That's where I cut my teeth. And I remember this woman, this guy just couldn't close this sale. The boots were like $800. Back then, that was a lot of money. Still a lot of money today, but it was baby blue ostrich boots. And he just couldn't close it. And I just walked over, and this woman was dressed to the nines. She looked like $1 million, and she's got these boots on. And I go, "What's going on over here? Why aren't we buying these yet? You look great in them." And she goes, "I know I look great in them." She goes, "But I wouldn't be able to wear them, but maybe once or twice. So does it really make sense?" And I go, "And I'm sure you'd only have a dress that you only wear once or twice." Just shut up. She goes, either she said you're an ass or you're good. I'm not really sure to this day which she said, because either would have worked. But she goes, "I'll wear them out." You just have to be in that moment, right? It's that moment to know that's what the right thing is to say to her. What I get frustrated with is so many salespeople is, you're getting that say and spray. I've been doing this a million years, John. I know it goes. If you ask them this, they'll do that. Or you have to have that voice, I guess. But this idea that you've seen it all, that jaded salesman, we've all seen them, right? Like, there's nothing new. They know how everybody works. And it's like, that's not really the way it is. Because in that very moment, you can be you and they can be them. We all have a great time, right? I can always tell a story that's working, doing their thing, because I hear people laughing. When I go into a silent store, I'm just like, oh, okay. Because here's the thing. People buy from people who make them feel they matter. It's that simple. If I can open my heart to somebody who's not like me, who doesn't look like me, a million things, and in that one moment I can take you out of it sucks to be you out in the main world of kryptonite and elections and crap we're going through in the States, then I did my job. And you know what? I'll probably be rewarded with it. But there is a real goal this day to remove as much humanity as we can. And think that, I walk by your store and the phone has a little thing. Save 20% if you come in here. Maybe you can get my attention, but how do you get my business? That's the difference, right?
Amen. Amen. And you did something with that lady who was dressed to the nines. And a lot of people might not pick up on it. And that's the power of the pause. You let her think about that. Because you're just being real. And then when she did, she bought. Salespeople, a lot of them just need to shut up.
I'm glad you caught that because I hadn't thought about that in a long time. But I used to literally, when I was selling, because I like to hear myself talk. I mean, I'm a speaker, for God's sake, you know, I want the applause. And I would literally bite my tongue. It would not be unusual for me to say that. And then, because I knew you're going to get in the way of this.
Amen. A lot of times salespeople unsell people. Right. And
or they start going down. Was it too much money? Do you think that blue is that the right blue for you? You're like, shut up. You know, and the young guy that couldn't close it, he didn't have anything else in his bag of tricks to, he'd had to try it on, had to look in the mirror, had to roll, you know, walk on hardwood and carpet and all these other things. Like, yeah, that's all good. But in the end, she just needs somebody to give her permission to do what she wanted to do, right?
100%. 100%. You know, that's why I've had a lot of people on the show. Ultimately, though, my hero is Zig Ziglar. I mean, three things about sales. It's all about service, solving a problem. And that service is also about building a connection. Like, you connected with that woman.
But it didn't take a lot, right? It's just step into it. It didn't take a lot. You just see what's going on. Your mind kind of laughs and says, well, she probably has a mink coat at home. She probably has a, whatever, skinny red dress. She's got some magnificent jewel for her hand. Fill in the blank, just like a guy. So many people take it for granted that guys have no money. It's like, guys just don't show it very often. We don't get a chance to show much. But if you could see his car, or you could see his garage, or you could see he's got $50,000 in golf clubs, you'd have different respect. So just start off with that. Assume that they've got that.
Yeah, and give them their space. You gave her space. And when you paused, she's like, huh. He's right. I have a lot of those dresses, actually. And so that you built an instant connection, right? And you let her be in her space. And for me, when in service, never nervous. You're just coming from a place of wanting to help somebody. And I've been a paper boy. I've mowed lawns. And I needed to do that because I wanted school clothes. I was raised by a single mom. So, you know, if I wanted school clothes, my older brother, he got some new ones sometimes or from Goodwill. And then when he was done with them, he's 3 years older, he'd hand me down. I got the hand-me-downs. And by the time I was done with them, they were wore out. So my younger brother, he got new ones. My older brother got new ones. And mom's like, well, you better find a way to get your own. And I'm like, well, I will. So, yeah. And I'm blessed, you know, because I did it with, I used to go door to door with my older brother. And he would have nothing to do with going to the door. He would always push me and say, go knock on the door, go knock on the door. And I just got good at knocking on the doors. I'm like, okay, hi, I'm John. Your grass is really in trouble. And man, Bob, what you just did and how you connected, it brings me back to how I used to, you know, really approach those doors. And I've been in sales now for 30 years and teaching people. I just absolutely love it. I just love it. I love watching, molding people to be of service, because I think sales is something we do for people, not to them. And sales is awesome. It's absolutely awesome.
I think one of the first books I read was Dale Carnegie, of course, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And you tell people that and they're like, oh, I get it. So I have to listen to people. You're like, anybody can understand that. Try doing it. Try doing it with this thing clucking or doing something and your mind wandering. And then you realize, like, what'd you say? And you're in a sales situation. Wow. You just said you don't matter. So you have to train your mind to shut the hell up. I mean, I meditate every morning, probably have for an awful long time. because I've got to control my thoughts. I got to be able to say, yeah, this is what's important. And don't get me wrong, if you're sitting at my desk right now, you'd say you are the most unorganized person ever. But I know where it all is. But when I'm in the moment, like we are right now, it's like you just have to be here. And for a lot of people, I think that's getting harder. And I think as AI takes over a lot of things, I think it will be harder for some people to focus on that. You know, as I was working with IBM this weekend in New York, and they were talking about how so many people are getting, they're going to get their degrees as a prompt engineer. And they said, that sounds great, except that'll be gone in a year. Like that won't even, AI will have leaped over those people. And so you have to be thinking way out ahead if that's it. And I just say, well, I don't want to think all the way out there. I just want to think of right now, what could I do that might save me time? And while people think, oh, you know, it's all whatever it is, I use Grammarly, that's AI. I use generative AI. I use Google and Gmail. Generative AI is completing sentences for me and those things. So if you just make peace that those kind of things can help you, you don't worry about, oh, it's going to take my job. It might take your job, but why not just jump in and say, well, let's see what it's got.
And I love that psychology. And, you know, test and measure. I mean, I spend a lot of time on today, right, being present. But I also, like you, I do meditation. And new this year is really visualization. Like I woke up 4:50. I got in the morning. I'm in Manila currently. So to be on this podcast, I must get up at 4:50 because nothing is going to take away from me doing my meditation visualization so that I'm centered, so I'm grounded. So when I go and do what I'm going to do all day long, and I fly to Indonesia tonight, I've got Imran in the afternoon, I've got several meetings set up, but it's going to be effortless because I'm centered and I'm calm.
It's right. Funny you say the visualization, because I used to wake up. Have you ever woken up and you're pissed off at somebody or something happened? And so now I've got a little thing that I visualize, like I sort of wake up and I'm like, that was a dream. And so I just start in my mind, I just say, all right, we're gonna get rid of that with a red, and then we're gonna do a blue and a green, and just scratch the record. I learned it from Tony Robbins a long time ago. You gotta scratch that record, because sometimes we bring that stress right into the first thing we do. And you don't realize why you're pissed off, and you go into work and then you're like, that was a dream, for God's sake. But until you
Yeah, and you're in reaction instead of being proactive.
It's right there in your body. It's gotta like, and you're saying, no, body, that's not real, right? It's kind of like all salespeople learn. I don't give a damn if you want to call 50 leads. You can't wait till you feel like it, because you'll never do it. Take 5. Great. At least you could do something.
Yeah, and Bob, I went through your history, and it's incredible. Like, you were the VP of marketing for It's a Grind coffee franchise. Tell me how you leaped from that, right? Which I see everything as sales. Like, relationships are sales, and serving. Service. Relationships are service, right? So I was going to ask you about your expertise as a retail doctor, because like some people might not connect the dots. How are you the retail doctor working with Google, working with IBM? And you came from being a VP of marketing from a Grind Coffee.
Even before that. So I put myself through college selling shoes. I'm a shoe dog. You know, once you tell me I can make commission on something, I'm like, great. Guys are like putty in my hands. Like, you know, in retail, it's funny. I tell people, you just have to know what the goal is. Like, if I'm selling shoes, my goal is to get your sock off, get your shoe off. That's my first goal. If I'm selling clothes, I want to get you half naked in a fitting room. Because once I have you there, I have you. Reality is, if I get a woman in a fitting room, you're mine. Because no one is going in there, going like, oh, I don't have a need. I've got them. And if I'm selling cars, I got to get you to take a test drive. Shut the hell up. Just let's go drive. I'll tell you about it later. But you've got to really focus on that. So, the big story is, I was working for this company. I grew them from a startup to like 55 locations around the United States, biggest player. And one day the company president says, what's the company's greatest asset? I go, well, that's easy. It's employees. It goes wrong. And I'm like, wrong? What? So we go around the room, 50, 60 people, and no one gets it right. And he goes, it's customers. I'm like, hmm. So I go downstairs and I said, a company's greatest asset is employees. That's how we built this brand. And you've obviously changed. I'm out in 2 weeks. Really? I go, yep, out. 2 years later, they're gone, by the way. Ching. But so I'm looking at my wounds and I go to Tony Robbins' seminar and Tony says, you better, in those days, he only did it one day at the Universal Amphitheater in Los Angeles. And I came away from there and he said, you better come up with a brand nobody else can do better than you. And I was like, retail doctor, filed the trademark. Then 3 months later, I don't know really what I'm going to do. Reading the newspapers and there's this guy who has a little coffee house and he roasts his own coffee and people are writing letters. This is what's wrong with America. The big guy putting the little guy out of business. I'm like, what is the story? So apparently Starbucks is going to put a location 100 feet from this guy's front door. And he's been in business 25 years. And so I go down to see his business and half the lights are burned out and the drinks are crappy. And two guys are leaning on the counter. When that second Starbucks opens, we'll be gone anyway. So I already told him I'm the manager. I'm like, this guy needs my help. So I go in and I find out from Mike, his sales have been going down 10% every year since the previous year when the first Starbucks opened 10 blocks from him. His he owes more than he sells in a year. And his stepfather, who said you'll never amount to anything, is his landlord. I'm like, dude, this sucks. So I go in and I basically tell him, you need to, you know, this is what I would do for you. And on the third time, he wouldn't sign the contract. I go, dude, I'm not coming back. If you're ready to change, let's do this. He signs a contract. We have a meeting that night, 20 employees. I put a picture of the Titanic on the back. I go, ladies and gentlemen, we're on this and it's not going down on my watch. And two girls got up and cried, you can't treat us like this. And I go, and I also know you're stealing from them too. Three other people got up, left. By the end of the month, I had one existing employee. All were new that I'd trained. Sales went up 11%. Sales went up 50% the first year, 40% about the next, even with that second Starbucks open. I call the local papers. Remember the story, how the little guy beat the big guy? Yeah, so they do these little regionals. And then I get one in the state. And then I call up the New York Times. Hey, would you be interested in a story how the little guy beat the big guy? We would. They introduced me. I'm speaking in Manhattan. And I flip over the Sunday Times, October of 1999. And there's a picture of me and Mike. And I open up the business page. And across the top, meet the category killer killer. Now, people say to me, oh, you know, how could I do that? It's like, find your own dream. First off, you have to perform. First off, you've got to really bring value and without ego. So I did that, and that was great. And then because I did that, this little startup called It's a Grind Coffee hired me while I was still retail doc, mind you, to do that. And I helped with franchising and training and all those kind of things. And we were the, if you ever saw Showtime's Weeds, we are the coffee that Mary Louise Parker's always drinking out of her cup. And at one day I had to just say, like, dude, I cannot do both of these things. It's crazy. So my whole thing, my whole brand is I work with actual retailers. I'm actually in the stores, or I just did a business makeover, a bunch of beverage stores, beer stores in upstate New York. I've had such a different experience that it doesn't matter. You know, when I go back to South Coast Plaza, number one mall in the world, the owner comes by and he's like, what the hell are you doing down here? At that time, I was selling cowboy clothes. And I go, why? He goes, you're beating the pants off of Tiffany's and all these other guys. What are you doing? I go, it doesn't matter what I sell. Selling is nothing more than a transference of feeling, because I feel good about myself and what I sell. I can sell you anything. And that's not in a tin siding on a house way or a used car sales. It's just, if I'm genuine, I could teach other people to be genuine. It doesn't matter what they're, you know, maybe some people are a little bit more inclined to be salespeople, but even then, I can still, like, you know, I can teach you how that all works. So from building all of that, my whole goal was I'm going to be the guy. I'm going to people guy in retail. I'm going to be the big guy in the small space. And that's what I carved out. So when Google calls and they said, hey, we need somebody to talk about how we do our stores and what we can do to increase sales, like, of course they're going to call me. They're not going to call some guy that's like, we value every guest. Let me give you an acronym, MAGIC, make everyone's day, always, whatever. I don't believe in that stuff. So that's how I got there. I hope that wasn't too long for your listeners there.
No, it was actually brilliant. And, you know, the nugget I picked up on especially was, you know, you want to get somebody out of their shoes. You want to get somebody out of their clothes. You want to get somebody into the new shoes, into the clothes, into the car. So it's, you're not selling, you're providing an experience when they actually come to you, regardless of how their methodology is of how they are going to buy. And, you know, Martin Lindstrom, you know him, wrote Biology. You've provided now an experience, and you're doing something unlike most salespeople are doing it. Most retail experiences, even the coffee house, you completely gave them a new experience, which is what AI is not going to do. Because if you talk about, you know, how is AI going to replace what we do? Well, you know, the last time I checked, AI doesn't understand empathy or people, and people don't trust it. So if, as long as the mantra of know, like, and trust is out there, guess what? People don't trust it right now, but they do trust people who put them in an experience, yeah, and make it about them. So that's priceless, Bob. Absolutely priceless. And I want to go into that as far as, you know, I want to expound so that people can connect the dots with you of how you just, I mean, obviously it's a superpower for you. It literally is, your superpower is providing a creative experience.
Absolutely.
And meeting people where they're at. And I really see it as a superpower. It's a lost art.
Well, I'm also a conductor, so maybe that's part of it.
Well, you know, it's obviously worked.
You know, it's all telling people what to do. You know, at some level, it's how do I entertain? How do I get them to do what I want to do? And how do I have fun at it? And I think as long as you do that, you can have a great career. But, you know, it's not always going to be wonderful. And if you're a salesperson out there, and we all know we have our ups and downs and those moments when you're just like, oh, this is crap. And we go down that road. And I think one of the benefits of being a salesperson is you realize we're about as happy as we make our minds up to be. So if you want to sit there and tell me all the reasons why no one's going to buy in January of 2024 and, you know, inflation this and, oh, you know, America's been trying to talk ourselves into recession for 3 years. And finally, I think they're kind of going like, maybe it's not going to happen, but oh no, here comes the election. It's going to happen again. Like, just watch. You just watch. It's like, why? Why?
Yeah, I'm not interested. I'm too busy to watch this shit.
So, you know, what I always think of, and if you're a salesperson that's struggling out there, it always helps to just think of a time when you're really surprised by how great a sale went. Think of a time when you laughed your head off and, you know, stuff came out of your nose. Think of a time when you got that commission check and you were so appreciative. Think of a time when, you know, somebody applauded your initiative, or they said, atta boy, or that girl. And just get those pictures in your head and say, this is what my life is. It's not my doubts. This is what I am. And eventually it comes around. May not come around today. But you know what? I do an exercise like that every single morning.
That's phenomenal. So, and you were talking a lot of people during COVID, a lot of people during, you know, these different events, whether it was, and COVID really was a black swan event, you know, and then there was a 2008 crisis and stuff like that. Tell us about a time that you've had an experience, a setback, and what were the steps that you took to overcome it?
I will share with you you just made me think of the story. Hopefully it works for you, John. So Hunter Douglas, we're doing the gallery program. It was a new high end. You couldn't, they had dealers, of course, but then to be a gallery dealer, you had to give them like 60 grand. I think that's now 120 or more. And you would give them a planogram and they would design these fixtures would be for your store. And you would have to sell X amount of all their categories, right? So Jeff Janke, who was head of the program, contacted me. And this is back in the days when we didn't have anything but machines for voicemail. And so I get this message on my machine. It's Jeff Janke with Hunter Douglas. And I was like, I don't want to work with ceiling fans. And so he calls me like three times based on this article is in the New York Times. And so finally I call him back and it's like, oh, this is window fashion. So when I met him at lunch, he goes, now do you know what I do? It's a $4 trillion business. Like, yes, sir. So anyway, we have a great partnership. I'm doing training. It's all going well. And I go to their headquarters in Denver and I'm doing a speech. And it all goes great. It's all going wonderful. And in a break, this guy comes up to me and he goes, do you know how much it would cost for me to go to my store? And I said, oh, probably more than you can afford. And, you know, because my clients there, I don't want to say how much they paid me. It's awkward as a dealer. Fast forward 3 years later, I'm in New Jersey, like Tony Soprano, New Jersey. Okay. And this guy meets me at the front of this. I was Hunter Douglas putting me on at a store for a region. So I go to the front door and this guy's like, walk with me. And I'm walking with him and we're walking through the store and we walk through displays. We get through the back. We're now back in the loading dock. And I'm like, this is how it ends. You know, like you're going to be killed for some reason. And this guy turns to me, goes, do you know who I am? And I'm like, no. Because I was at your gallery dealer thing, and then it hits me. It's like, oh, shit, it's that guy. And he goes, do you remember I asked you a question? How much would it cost for me to have you come to my store? Do you remember what you said to me? Like, more than you can afford? He goes, yep. And the fact that you're here 3 years later and paid for by Hunter Douglas, and I said, thanks, that's the best gift you could have given me, and I apologize profusely. But what an idiot. What a stupid thing to say to somebody. But in my naivete, and I'm young and you don't know what to say and you're trying to laugh it off, but clearly, A, I could have probably made that sale at his store and been at his store 3 years earlier, and I would have never known what kind of a jerk I had been. So what a great gift. And, you know, I thought, oh my gosh, how do I make it up to him? And he ended up working with me for a little bit after that, but it's all of those little moments, right? It's the moment when you say something offhanded and you're out of your zone because you're nervous, and just being able to realize that those are gifts instead of could have been a crushing defeat. But you know, hey,
I agree. I see them as blessings because I've made huge mistakes.
I want to hear one door to door. What's one of your huge mistakes as a kid?
Oh, as a kid. Well, I don't know if it was a mistake door to door. Yeah. So I was a paper boy and they had this contest, right? And I come from very modest beginnings and I like wanted to win. There was a bike, there was a boat, there was walkie talkies, there was all these different prizes. And I just thought it was amazing. Like, really? And so I was going door to door to door to door, trying to get new subscriptions and making a pitch to people. And I really wasn't listening, right? People were like, no, you know, I bought it before and the paper boy threw it in the grass. It got rained on. You know, I couldn't find it in the snow. Like, this has been again and again. And no, I just, you know, I don't see any value in the paper anymore. Half the time it doesn't get delivered. And I just kept pitching and pitching and pitching. And, you know, it was all about the contest. It was all about the contest. It was all about me. And I was like, holy shit. These guys have told me all of their problems and I haven't been listening.
If I just stopped and said, that'll never happen with me.
Now, every door, I changed it. I said, you know what? Hi, my name's John. I'm the new paper boy. And I just got this route. And it's my job to go out there and find out what was the biggest challenges of the last paper boy? Because what I'm doing for everybody on my route is I'm giving them the opportunity to get the paper for free. I'm going to deliver it to you every day, rain, snow, or shine. And I was in Caney, Kansas, a town of 5,000 people, right? And I said, I'll give it to you for free. I'll put it inside your screen. I'll put it in your mailbox. I'll make sure that it's delivered, especially the Sunday one, because it has all the coupons. And all those coupons, they're going to pay for that paper because you're going to save money, right? And if you're unhappy in any way, I'll pay for the paper so you still get it for free for the whole month. And my God, I took that. I went from 103 to like 270, and I won that boat. I won the walkie-talkies. I won flowers for mom. I won 3 6-packs of Pepsi Cola. That's what they called it back then. And I just realized, wow. And later on in life, now I realize that was a free offer. They do it on the internet. They call it freemium, right? And that was the biggest lesson I learned. And that delivering 270 of those papers that were that big on a Sunday, I also learned that my brothers were full of shit because they said they would help me with the paper out. And it was snowing. And my mom said, nope, because I would go to mom, they're not helping. They said they would. You signed up. You're delivering all of those papers, just like you said. And
but that's so important too, because she could have let you get away with it, right? She could have said, you're right, it's snowing, it's cold out. But she taught you that value that, no, your word matters, and there is nobody but you. And I think that's the challenge. I know, I don't know if you want another story. Do you want another story here?
I do. I love the stories, man.
Very quick story. So I'm selling cowboy clothes, got my hat and the whole thing. Go to this. So I get promoted to the new store in Santa Monica Place Mall. They had a guy there and they weren't doing so well. And so I was kind of known as the guy that would either kick people up or kick them out. That was kind of my reputation. So I go to the store and there's like one girl and she's, let's just say, very well endowed. And she liked flirting with guys, but she was only like 17. It was just awkward. And there was another guy who didn't speak English and two part-timers that I never saw. And they hated me from the word go. And so I came in one day and two employees were having sex in the back room. They didn't care. And sales were not getting better. And so I told the owner, I said, I made an appointment, drove up to him and, so I get the goal for August and it's a 20% increase from last year. And last year it'd been hammered, doing well. So I go up there and I say to the owner, I was like, hey, there's no way we can hit this. They hated me so much. They threw out. So in the old days, you would have a sheet of paper and all the mailing labels were on there. You had to Xerox them off and peel them off and put them on a letter. And so they'd had those for 3 years because the store was fairly new. And you copied them and then you put them on. And that's what invited people to the big sale in August. They threw them all out because they hated me so much. So I told the owners, like, there's no way I can hit this. There's no way I can do this. And he goes, well, then I guess you're not the guy I thought you were. I was like, you're not going to lower my goal? He goes, nope. So I'm driving back down to Santa Monica. And I just suddenly thought, what if I could? What if I could? What if I could do this? What would I have to do? So I fired two people right away. Two more quit. Found out the guy I didn't think spoke English. Actually, bilingual. Important in America. Spartan in Southern California spoke very good English, but he was from South America. So it didn't quite sound like the way I thought it would, but totally got it. Made him my assistant manager. The young girl who could flirt with guys, like, this could be a function. Just don't do it quite so much. And I hired one other guy. And the four of us ended up increasing sales by like 25%, got manager of the month, got manager of the year. Only because I thought, what if I could? That's all I would say if you're listening to this right now. What if I could? It's a fun place to play in your mind, right? Like, what if I could? What would I have to do? Great. Instead of, no way I could hit this. There's no way. There's no way. Great, you win. Yay. Great. Okay, there's no way. What are you doing here then?
I love that. What if I could? And you know what? My mom taught me the greatest lesson of my life, and you talked about keeping your word. She used to tell me all the time, because I'd go there and I'd be like, Mom, I can't deliver all these papers. They're too big. There's too many. And she said, can't, never did anything. Can't, never did anything. Now go do it. And eventually she just conditioned that in me to where I knew I could achieve anything. Like, I became a multimillionaire and no one in my family's ever done it. And that's a testament to my mom and my grandfather, because I never had a father. And my grandfather always used to tell me, look where you're going, not where you've been. Look where you're going, John, not where you've been. And to me, those are still priceless lessons.
And we don't teach those. We don't teach any of that anymore. We don't have a sense of stick-to-itiveness. We wait till the kids have been consumed by this thing and try to wheel them back. And I just say, once that's their new boyfriend and girlfriend, dude, when we grew up, if you wanted to have, if you wanted to do something, you had to get out of the house. You had to go out and meet somebody. You had to have a date. You had to do this, go to a movie, go to a concert. I can do all that on my phone. I don't need anyone else. And I think that's the worst part of it, that we learned you needed somebody else, and going back to your buddy Zig, you'll get everything you want in life if you just help enough other people get what they want.
Amen. My boy's turning 6, and you know what? He doesn't have one of those. It's Montessori school for him, because it's all experiential. For me, that's what it is. And as soon as he's done with that 7 hours a day, it's straight to the playground, and he absolutely loves it. And then his extracurricular is Taekwondo. He's got his high yellow. He just got his high yellow belt. And so we only now introduce the iPad. He gets 1 hour a day and he can use it, because it's a lot. It's a lot. 7 hours in school, and he's in kindergarten. And then he goes to the playground. And then, twice a week, it was 3 days a week, he goes to Taekwondo. And, because I wanted to have that discipline.
You got and a fighter there.
Flexibility. And he's actually a lover. But he's a lover that when he grows up, he'll be able to kick your ass. Because he's pretty good. He kicks harder than all the kids. But he really is a loving child. Like, seriously, when he was 2 years old, me and his mother were, like, apologizing to a lot of other parents, because we'd go to the mall, we'd go to the retail store, wherever we go, if he sees a little human, a little boy or girl, he just goes straight up to him and hug him.
Oh, I love that. That's so great.
He just is fearless and just loving, and didn't even speak until he was 2. But he would just do that. And some people were like, oh my God, that's so amazing. And then some people were like really taken aback. Hey, control your child. And I'm like, no worries. I got him. He just likes to love on people.
Well, that's one of my pet peeves, is the exact opposite. You know, somebody's with their kid and they're holding their kid invariably, and then they turn away and then they say, oh, he's shy. He doesn't like to be. And it's like, you're teaching him, you're rewarding him. Turn away from people, mommy.
Yeah, not good.
Just like, you're crippling this kid. So don't do that if you're at home. Don't cripple your kids.
There you go, Bob. This is an absolute pleasure. So one last thing, because okay. I mean, you're amazing. You're amazing. Like, I just get it. And how you've done it is with so many different brands. But how do people connect the dots? How you took those experiences and literally, like, helped companies explode. And then now it's become IBM. Is IBM opening stores? Like,
no.
How do you take these Fortune 500 companies, and what are you doing for them, with their branding or their value proposition is, and helping them?
I think the point is that you have to go through and do what feels best for you. I mean, again, my whole window I wanted to work in is, if you, you know, in some ways I do share that with Tony Robbins and with Zig Ziglar. You're trying to make the world a better place. I use it through music and I use it through people. That's my skill. I think the thing that I can see is really clear. I was talking to a guy, John Robison, and he's like the foremost Rolls-Royce Bentley mechanic. He's got like hundreds of cars he does in Massachusetts. He's the guy. And talking with him, he's also a visiting professor at William and Mary College. And he talks about the biodiversity of personality and how he's on the spectrum and kind of autistic. And he talks about how people look down at him like he couldn't look in their eyes. That's, autistic kids don't like to look at you in the eye. And people would always say, look me in the eye. And so his whole mission has been, how do I get people to understand that everybody adds to the spectrum? Like, we need a guy like me who can focus on the world of the car. And he goes, conductors are very much like, I'm like, well, I'm a conductor. And he goes, well, you hear things no one else does. You hear all the instruments. Most of us don't hear it that way. And so I think my gift is, I do the same thing with people and with systems. I can walk into a store and instantly go like, yeah, well, that's what that is. But more importantly, you don't get paid for that. You get paid for, what do we want it to look like? What do we need to do? And that's a hard lift. That's a hard lift for a lot of people. And so I think what I'm fortunate to do is, not only can I see it, but I can articulate it in a way that somebody's like, oh, well, I want more of that. And ultimately, that's what any of you are doing. I don't care what you're selling. I'm selling Lamborghinis. Great. So are you just going to go in there and say, oh, well, it's got this and this and this, and it does that and that and that? Yeah, that's what we always do. Well, good. We'll leave that behind. What changed in this guy's life that he's standing in your Lamborghini showroom today? That's the question you have to ask. Going all the way back, John, to our original thing of get the shoe off. What changed in your life today that this woman is buying a brand new ring for herself that goes on the opposite? It's for her. What changed that she's in there? If you don't find that out, you're an idiot. You're an idiot, right? Somebody's looking at houses. Why are they looking at houses? Well, they just, you know, they saw an open house, and no one goes to an open house just for the hell of it. What changed? Why today are they in your, as a prospect? And worse, what are you doing to hold on to them? Well, I give them my card. Why don't you have a QR code? Or why don't you just take out your phone and say, oh, you got an iPhone? Let's just touch them together and I'll share my contact information. You know, well, we're not really looking to, great, that's fine. Because you know your goal is, I want to touch this phone and get their contact information. Because you can make a difference in their life if you just, you've got a physical connection. But even then, you got to have a conversation when they're looking at the house, instead of that lonely ghost over there in felon pose, you know, that's creepily standing with their hands behind their back, watching you look around the house. Like, ugh. The best one helps you see it, right? And makes you, again, going all the way back, John, people who feel they matter by. That simple. And as you said before, people don't feel valued. They feel left alone, whether that's your sales team or your prospects, then that's where you start digging. And once you understand that, then you just find a way to articulate it in a way people go, I want more of that. Just like your podcast is a sales machine. It's been a pleasure to be here today, John.
Hey, Bob, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. You know, I go through your LinkedIn and I'm just so impressed because I saw that you went to music school, several different universities. And I was like, you know, how am I going to connect the dots of that? But now I see your ability to be a director or conductor. And that's really priceless how now I've connected it to why you're so creative. It's intrinsic. And like I said, I see that as your superpower. You got 348,000 followers on LinkedIn. Obviously, people see you as a game changer. If people want to work with you, and do you work with, I mean, because you could be intimidating, Bob, when you got a bio where you work with Google, you work with all these big brands, IBM and Hunter Douglas. I mean, these are enormous brands.
You have a check, I'll work with you. There you go. I'm a sales guy, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
Absolutely. So, where did they find you?
Yeah, certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, Bob Phibbs. You can see me as a retail doctor. There's a guy in Australia using my brand, but I'm the guy in the USA. Go to retaildoc.com, RETAILDOC.com. And obviously, if you're a Facebook person, some of you boomers out there like me, it's just the retail doctor and you can find it. But make no mistake, we're about as happy as we make our minds up to be. So if you're watching this today, you've had fun with us today, I encourage you to listen to John because he's got the right idea. And more importantly, there's very few of us out there that can inspire people and just understand that, yeah, nobody wants to be a salesperson when you're 3 years old. But if you call it something different, I'm an influence peddler. I like to meet people. I like to have fun when I'm working. Well, then suddenly you got respect. And if you're last point, it's funny when I go into some retail stores and I'll go, oh, well, you're a salesperson. I'm the owner. I'm like, well, you're the biggest salesperson around, dude. You got to sell the bank to be able to give you the money to go and do it. So why do we put all this crap on you're a salesperson? Why don't you let that go and just own it?
And I'm fine with that.
I'm a salesman. Thank you.
I'm fine with it. And I love helping people.
It's been a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to hearing great things.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, Bob Phibbs.
That's a wrap, folks. Thanks for joining me today. And if you got value from this episode, do me a favor. Like, subscribe, and refer a friend. And if you want even more value, go to thesalesmachine.com. Click on resources, and there's tons of resources there to increase profits and drive performance in your business. Right on, come on.